playing catch-up with the Bible. The other evening, Nick and I were half-watching a Stanley Cup playoff game involving the Boston Bruins. At one point, the camera panned the rafters, displaying the banners honoring Bobby Orr, and Nick commented, "Wow, Bobby Orr only played for 10 years. And then I responded with a nugget from the deep recesses of my brain. "Yes, but he finished his career playing for the Blackhawks." Nick couldn't believe that this was true. Bobby Orr, a Blackhawk? But then he was suitably impressed when he consulted the internet on his iPad. I was puzzled as to how I dredged up this fact. During the time that Orr played for the Blackhawks, I was totally absorbed by medical school, and the Blackhawks games were not televised at that time, so I really have no idea how I heard about it, why I chose to remember it, and how I could recall it some 35 years later. Actually, I do know that my brain seems to be uniquely sensitive to sports trivia. It acts like a super-absorbent ShamWow towel. The bigger question in my mind is what my brain refuses to remember, like anything to do with the Bible. I know for a fact that I've read about or heard the explanation of Passover, the burning bush, and parting of the Red Sea multiple times, certainly more than the fact that Bobby Orr finished his career in Chicago. But I can't give you any more details on these events other than that they were biblical. There's also that story about Jonah and the whale, but that actually might have something to do with Pinocchio, who I think also spent time in a great blue. There is something biblical about Pontius Pilate, but that name only makes me think of Pierre Palat, the sturdy defenseman, number 3, and captain of the Blackhawks in the 1960s. For starters, I received no religious training from my parents. My mother did have a few expressions that provided some limited insight. If she was impressed by something, she might say, "Jesus Murphy." If there was something that was threatening, she might say, "Judas Priest." And so early on, I got the sense that Judas was a baddie. And then she had a favorite song called "The Very First Baseball Game," which appealed to her love of clever wordplay. I still remember the tune and the first couple of verses. Eve stole first, Adam second, Solomon umpired the game. Finally, my mother often participated in musical skits, and one involved John the Baptist. She stuck her head through a tray and surrounded it with lettuce and vegetables, closed her eyes, and tilted her head to make it look like she was an entree. And that's how I know that John the Baptist was beheaded. My grandparents faithfully attended the Presbyterian Church, and my great-great-grandfather was a very pious man who actually founded the church. There is even a beautiful stained glass window in the church in his honor. But my parents never went. My best guess is that they found it too much work to get 6 children all dressed up merely to fidget in church. On Sunday mornings, my mother was more apt to get us all bundled up and go skating at the local ice rink. Curiously, I am actually in the church regularly now, since I participate in the handbell choir. Aside from the weekly rehearsals, I theoretically should attend the church service when we perform. At one church I played in, our seats were right below the pulpit. And as soon as the very popular and articulate minister started in on the prayer of confession and the scripture lesson, my head would start bobbing, and moments later I would be dead asleep. To eliminate the possibility of public snoring, I felt it was much more polite to simply file out after we performed our first number and do the Sunday Times crossword puzzle and then sneak back in when it was time for our closing number. I perceived the local Presbyterian church as a very lovely event space. We got married there, and it hosted memorial services for both my parents. My brothers and I met with the minister as we were planning my mother's service. My agenda for the meeting was to let him know who was going to speak and what songs we had selected. These were not hymns, but a rendition of "What a Wonderful World" and two nephews playing a Grateful Dead song. So I was totally surprised when the minister interrupted me, held out his hands, and said, "Let us bow our heads in prayer." Well, okay, it was his house after all. So why is it my brain is so reluctant to pluck and retain anything to do with the Bible? Why do I have such a selective lint trap? Yes, I've been lucky to live in a country and community where my cultural identity has never been challenged, so maybe that explains why religion has not played a prominent role in my life. But it must be more than that, since the Bible is the basis of so much art, literature, history, good and evil. How could I have ended up with such a gaping hole in my liberal arts education? It was time to play catch-up. I knew that I could never read the Bible, so I searched for an abridged Bible for dummies. I found the perfect primer, The Good Book by David Plotz, subtitled the bizarre, hilarious, disturbing, marvelous, and inspiring things I learned when I read every single word of the Bible. The blurb said, irreverent. Plotz's hilarious summaries will have you laughing out loud. Who knew the Bible was such a laugh riot? Irreverence and humor might just get me through the good book. It seems that Plotz and I have very similar outlooks. He is culturally Jewish, I am culturally Christian, but when he says that he goes to his place of worship as often as the DMV and with the same degree of pleasure, I am right there with him. We both know some Bible basics, such as Adam and Eve and the Ten Commandments, but know few other details. Plotz is my shepherd, and he leadeth me. Off I went into a chapter-by-chapter recap of the Old Testament. Oh, the horror, the horror. There are gruesome tales of rape, mass murder, incest, concubines, slaves, and general mayhem, more heinous than anything the TV show Law & Order Special Victims Unit has ever come up with. The story of Dinah is one such example. The poor girl is raped by Shechem, who then realizes he loves her. Actually, there's one Law & Order plot about a woman who unwittingly marries her rapist. Dinah's father and brothers agree to the marriage, but on the condition that all men in Shechem's town agree to undergo circumcision. However, after the procedure, Dinah's menfolk descend on Shechem's village and brutally murder everyone, steal the livestock, and take all the women as slaves. Plotz is aghast, and so am I. Do we want our children reading this stuff? In church last week, the fourth graders were proudly given Bibles as they graduated to the next level of Sunday school. However, I don't think that I let my daughter watch Law & Order until she was at least in sixth grade. I went to the local library and riffled through a children's Bible and was relieved to see that poor Dinah had been edited out. But most of the rest of the Old Testament was there. And even though the stories are sugar-coated and come with gentle illustrations, the horror cannot be totally eliminated. There is Abraham, who is given a test of faith and ordered to sacrifice his son Isaac. The children's Bible dutifully shows father and son climbing the mountain gathering wood to make a fire. Isaac innocently asks his father the whereabouts of the sacrificial goat, never dreaming that his beloved father is about to kill him. The children's Bible then shows a picture of a panicked Isaac tied to the funeral pyre, with his father holding a knife a millimeter from his neck. Only then does God relent. Are you kidding me? This is the warm and fuzzy God that we want our children to love and respect? And then there is the story of David, who lusts after the lovely Bathsheba, the wife of his brave and loyal general Uriah. David seduces her and gets her pregnant, and then recalls Uriah from the front in the hopes that he will bed his wife and think that the impending child is his. When that plan backfires, David connives to send Uriah off to certain death in a battle in order to marry Bathsheba. David has now violated at least three commandments, coveting a neighbor's wife, lying, and killing. God is displeased, but only publishes David indirectly through the death of his innocent newborn son. Come to think of it, there is another Law & Order episode about a woman who inadvertently marries her husband's killer. But this man is more appropriately punished, life without parole. I'm beginning to think that the Old Testament was good source material for the most lurid episodes of Law & Order. I do thank Plotz for introducing me to Leviticus 19, which lists a charming set of laws that address basic human behavior, such as stealing, lying, or killing, or degrading your daughter by making her a prostitute. Then there are laws that address issues of everyday life, including business ethics. My favorite is, do not use dishonest standards when measuring length, weight, or quantity. This is an enduring business ethic, whether it is the humble shopkeeper with his finger on the scale, or the dissembling Wall Street banker. Here is the oddest law of all. Do not wear clothing of two different kinds of material. This law has not stood the test of time. As I plowed through Plotz's version of the Old Testament, I realized why my brain is so resistant to the Bible. I envision a swing where the perfect time to give it a push is in the instant of stillness at the height of the ark. A push at any other time results in chaos. I have recognized that my brain has that moment of stillness for a limited number of things. Pattern recognition is one general theme that manifests itself in birdwatching, crossword puzzles, looking at pathology slides under the microscope, knitting patterns, etc. And then, of course, there's sports trivia. I have also recognized that my brain is very literal. There is simply no moment of stillness for fantasy. I'm sorry, but that is how I would categorize much of the Old Testament, with burning bushes, parting of the Red Sea, Jonah and the whale. The Bible calls these events miracles, implying that there is an explanation. It's just beyond our limited earthly understanding. I categorize these events as fantasy, implying that there is no way, no how, they could ever be true. My innate aversion to fantasy is consistent. I have a similar lack of interest in Greek mythology. When did the Greeks recognize that their gods were myths? And I have never seen any episode of Star Trek, Star Wars, or Harry Potter. And so I come to the end of the good book, and here's what one Bible illiterate thinks. I should preface this by saying that Nick and I miscommunicated on our Costco runs, and we now have 10 pounds of limes in the fridge. I'm diligently trying to work my way through this green mountain, and I'm now on my fourth lime-laden margarita. But here it is. I certainly recognize that the Bible and the church are a source of community and strength for millions, but organized religion just doesn't resonate with me. I don't have a beef with the Bible. There are many good stories, and the book of Proverbs seems particularly peppy and offers some good advice. But I already know that there are endless opportunities for self-improvement, and the prayer of confession at the beginning of the Presbyterian service is a definite downer. But the main issue is that I can find spirituality without a guidebook. If I keep my eyes open and take a walk in the park, my brain will find a still moment and let the random wonder and awe pour in.